The, in the sheet it says Cambridge, but it's Cambridge, Massachusetts, so I came over for a holiday. We are in Connaught Chase up there, staying in a caravan, and I came down for the day on the train, and it's my day in town. Thank you for having me. This is actually a long title, and it's about a project in progress which I'm working on for the last 2 years now, and it's only a very small facet of it. The application is probably not very familiar to you. It's automotive, and it's supposed to become a display-based driver assistance system with night vision sensitivity extended into the near infrared, with wide dynamic range. Photographers say high dynamic range. The automotive industry says wide dynamic range, but it means the same. And the capability to capture and distinguish traffic-relevant color. It's not your wedding photography, you will see in the examples. The technology, of course, has to be cheap. It's a single image or camera with multiple slope wide dynamic range, which we'll explain very briefly, near-infrared sensitivity and color capability. There are lots and lots of challenges, and one I found interesting, and it's actually at the heart of the system, is the trade-off between wide dynamic range extension, infrared sensitivity, and color quality. And one experimental set I find particularly interesting, and I want to talk about it today, it's the measuring of the spectral response curves in wide dynamic range mode, for which it needs lots of colored light. The solution it sort of helped was that image processing restores spectral responses, and if it does that, then it's good for the color quality. So you can achieve acceptable color quality at low processing expense. So that's very quickly some background to wide dynamic range. Why do you need wide dynamic range in night vision in particular? Because lots of things are much darker than at daytime. A lot of people think that wide dynamic range means bright sunlight, but it's not necessarily the case. You need very dark things like pedestrians and deer and the like in front of dark roads. We did actually some measurements, image statistics, and showed that there are a lot of very dark objects out there at nighttime, and they cluster around illuminated objects and light sources, and you can see the two distributions for day and night, and the intra-scene dynamic range can very well exceed 120 dB. dB is here dictated by specsmanship. That's basically, even if you have light intensities, but it's actually voltage-based dynamic range, because it started at the output voltage range, dynamic range, which is incorrect. But we are stuck with it, so it's 20 log ratio, just to know what 120 dB means. How do we want to use our image data? On one hand, we want luminance information, which is bright and extended into the near infrared, and is also wide dynamic range. We want a certain amount of color in it, but we're mostly interested in traffic-relevant colors, and these are, due to the necessity of or limitation of sensitivity, these are mainly unrelated colors, as we learned some years ago. These are called unrelated colors, small, isolated, bright colors. And we put them together into natural-looking color images so that the driver can really quickly identify what's out there. Which is shown here. Now the technology, everybody knows a color imager has color filters on it. And this is basically limited to the visible range, but it uses only about 50% of the available spectral sensitivity, which is shown on that curve, spectral sensitivity of the CMOS imager. You don't use much of it. If you want to use everything, you have to introduce pixels with no filter. So you take the second green pixel and put no filter on it, basically a clear pixel, which we call panchromatic because it senses visible and near-infrared radiation. And this is basically 100% of your image's spectral sensitivity. And then you have color pixels that, oh, that looks very good. You have a wonderful sensitive color imager, but there's a little catch to it, which I show in the next slide. If you go to your fabrication facility and say, I want red, green, and blue pixels, they give you the standard colorants, which you probably know more about this than I, why that is, but they definitely transmit a lot of infrared, or to say almost all infrared. So a blue pixel gives you a blue plus infrared signal, a green pixel a green plus infrared signal, a red pixel is red plus infrared, and the panchromatic pixel has everything. So what do? You can put an optical infrared cut filter in front of it, but then you lose all your infrared, so this is no good. So you go to your computer and apply a 4x4 matrix instead of a 3x3, and you get blue, green, and red and infrared signals out of it. That's how it looks in theory. In practice, you have to do a little bit of work. You have to determine, first measure your spectral pixel responses, and they don't look too pretty because there's a lot of crosstalk. It's a low-cost imager, nothing but you have in your digital consumer camera. So there's a lot of crosstalk, but nevertheless, if you do your optimization right, you get a fairly decent separation of the red, green, blue, and infrared channels, and you can even attempt to approximate the color matching functions if you so want, and get a pretty decent color reproduction out of it. But however, there's quite some trade-offs here. The most central is the near-infrared versus color trade-off. We have an experiment here where we have an incandescent light source symbolized by this light bulb. Then we have a transmittent Macbeth color chart. Both devices are made by Image Engineering in Germany, and they make a very good, nice Macbeth-like transparent color chart. And then we have a bank of short pass filters that cut out all or some of the near infrared, and then very simple image processing, just demosaic, and then mapping of the red, green, and blue pixels to a color image and the P pixel to a black and basically to a monochrome image. And you can see on the left, we cut out all the near infrared, you get a fairly decent color image and a monochrome image. But if you shift the cutoff wavelengths further into the near infrared to 700, 750, 850, or then no infrared cutoff filter, you see the colors sort of disappear, and it all becomes sort of a pinkish monochrome, and the monochrome image becomes brighter and brighter because this is very simple. There's more energy now in the near infrared. Now, if you apply your virtual NIR filter or the 4x4 matrix, you get a pretty good color reconstruction. You also will notice that the colors get less saturated and darker towards the more near infrared you have in your radiation. That is simply because the color to near infrared signal ratio gets lower and lower. And that green patch, which should be white, is due to pixel saturation or clipping, so which skews your matrix results, because it should be 350, but it's clipped to 255, and then you get green or blue or something. That will be sorted out by white dynamic range, which avoids that clipping. So now, very briefly, and you might quiz me about this later on because we don't have the time to, is how the white dynamic range extension works. On the left you have a diagram which shows basically charge versus time. A CMOS pixel is a capacitor, and illumination creates photocurrent that discharges the capacitor, and the rate of discharge is proportional to the amount of light that falls on a particular pixel. So a dark pixel discharges slowly, a bright pixel very quickly, which is shown here, bright, brighter, brightest. And of course, you will reach discharge the capacitor before the end of the exposure time, then you cannot record any signal variation or any image information any longer. What you do is you recharge all the pixels partially, not completely, otherwise you destroy all the image information just partially. And those pixels who are affected by this recharge will start with a shorter exposure time, T int minus T reset. And you can do this several times, like a cascade. So it's a multiple exposure within a single exposure time. And the response curve on the right looks like this. This is a real model. It's not just drawn by hand. That basically is almost quasi-logarithmic. You can fit a logarithmic curve to it. And on the bottom you see pictures. On the left is a linear imager against the sun. The Americans always drive into the sunset and that get blinded by it. And if you use a wide dynamic range imager, the effect will be not as lethal because you see there's a car coming towards you. So the pile-up is avoided. And now let's briefly look at the wide dynamic range versus color trade-off. There is a book about wide dynamic range imaging that says you don't need to linearize if you have direct wide dynamic range, but you can see at this range of pictures, the more you extend the wide dynamic range, the less raw chromaticity you have, and the less color to near infrared signal ratio you have. This light, these round bits in the middle are incandescent lights, colored lights, and you see almost no color. Now we have a measuring device here from Image Engineering in Germany, which is basically a filter bank near a very narrow interference filter bank and reference filter bank. And the good thing about it is it's very bright. You have about 4,000 candelabras square meter to measure, so you can measure for the first time in wide dynamic range. And you can look it up on the website. We have it customized to 4-channel color processing for our imager. And this is an example spectral response in crosstalk. On the right, you see a customized Canon camera where the infrared cut filter was removed, and you see the infrared sensitivity of the imager. And of course, you want one responsivity of one in the pass bands and zero in the stop bands, but in reality, this, due to crosstalk, this cannot be achieved. Now this is our own imager. It shows a fair amount of crosstalk. On the left is a conventional RGBG imager. On the right, it's RGBP, where the crosstalk is increased because of the clear pixel and the light that scatters from it into the RGB pixels. Now, if you have wide dynamic range and spectral filters, these or color filters, the color filter arrays are basically designed for linear images. They look very good in linear linear graphs, but if you have a logarithmic graph, you can see how ineffective these filters are in reality. If you go into wide dynamic range, they barely make a dent into the signal, which is shown on the right. So these are actually examples of the measurements in linear on the top, and then 68, 92, and 116 dB. On the right, you see the actual response curves, and you can see that the spectral differentiation is more and more diminished, and the pixel almost look the same, and that explains why everything looks pretty colorless. Then we did a very simple experiment. We used a power function approximation, which is very simple but can be easily implemented in the system, trying to reconstruct or linearize the signals and look what effect this has on the spectral response curves. And you can see that the approximate linearization pretty well restores the spectral responses which we had when the imager was operated in linear mode on the top left. So that does a pretty good job of restoring the spectral responses, and also seems to, if you look at these pictures, coincide with acceptable color quality. So here's in linear mode, and then 70-80 dB raw data on the bottom is linearized, and the virtual NIR filter applied. And if you go to higher and higher dynamic range, you can see basically how this progresses, but the colors are pretty well reconstructed. This is sort of, you would probably ask me, why don't you do exact linearization like it's shown here? If you do textbook image processing, you would take the response curve like this blue one here, and do a, so if you do wide dynamic range extension, you lose all the color and you get also reconstruction errors, which are signified by these blue fields here. And if you do an exact linearization, as is shown there in the bottom diagram, then you can reconstruct the colors much more correctly. The problem is you have to implement all this stuff in hardware on an image processor, and there's very little space of doing much processing, so you have to come up with some approximate solutions, and the optimized approximation yields acceptable color quality even if it's not exact. So this is sort of the first result. You can also use the same methodology for instance, optimizing crosstalk compensation. This is shown here. You can do a simple spatial filter to reduce the electrical and optical crosstalk, or you can see what effect your color matrix has on the spectral response curve, so you can get carried away and play from step to step to your image processing pipeline. You can do the same to commercial cameras and see what they do in their image processing if you have raw capability. So I can basically summarize this. Spectral response curves have been measured in wide dynamic range extension for the first time. I shouldn't say such thing, but I'm pretty certain that this device hasn't been used the same way. We studied the effects of dynamic range extension and color processing on the spectral response. We are pretty certain that linearization is necessary in multiple slope wide dynamic range images. The dynamic range extension distorts the spectral responses, the linearization restores them, and we can achieve acceptable quality when the spectral responses are restored to those in linear mode. And here are some actual examples of pictures in a very bad Massachusetts rainstorm on top, and we are only interested in the colored lights at the cars, and then there's a night vision scene. They all have full infrared sensitivity, and on the left you see the components of monochrome image, reconstructed color image, and fused image, and that could be another topic. But thank you for your time then. Basically, standard practice, you can do two things. You can either take a bunch of colors, take pictures of them, measure them, and try to optimize it, or go from the spectral response curves, to measure the spectral responses, and then try to turn them into color matching functions by a linear transformation or a linear set of linear equations whose coefficients are in this matrix. And usually for a digital camera you have 3x3, and here you have 4x4. So that's the only, it's just an optimization problem you can solve.
Okay, we'll have to move on to the next again.